Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. This is your host, Jay Smooth, and you are listening to Ball is Life on radio.dominican.edu. Thank you for listening again. I have a great show for you today. Final Four is this Saturday, so we're going to talk about the 10 X factors of the Final Four of all four teams. Also, there's a big game today between the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder, so I'll give you a preview on that game. And also, the NBA season's coming to the end, so I'll give you my end of the year NBA awards predictions. So we're going to have a very great show for you today, so sit back, relax, and listen. So again, like I said, the Final Four is this Saturday. You've got Connecticut and Florida playing, and then you've got Wisconsin playing the University of Kentucky. And these are four great teams that have, you know, some of them had shocked a lot of people. Kentucky, you know, they've got their five freshman starters. They've came out of nowhere. No one expected them to make the Final Four. Or UConn, the Connecticut, no one expected them to make the Final Four. But those are they're the two hottest teams right now in the tournament. And you've also, you know, of course, you got Florida, who was the number one overall seed, was expected to be there and is expected to be the favorite to win. And of course, Wisconsin is getting hot. So it should be very entertaining basketball. So there's 10 X factor, the 10 biggest X factors of this Final Four. Let's start off with number one, Connecticut's shot blocking ability. So if you didn't see if you didn't watch the Elite Eight, Connecticut played Michigan State. And if you watched the game, you could tell that Michigan State wanted no part of Connecticut's interior defense. The Spartans attempted 29 three-pointers and only 17 two-pointers. So that's weird. That's 63% of their field goal attempts coming from three-point range. And that's very uncharacteristic of Michigan State. They, you know, they like to give it inside. They give it the pain and let them go to work inside. But they were shooting a lot more threes than expected. So that was weird. Connecticut's Amita Brema and DeAndre Daniels. Connecticut is one of the best shot blocking teams in the nation. They've blocked 15.4% of the opposition's 2-point field goal attempts during the season. And even though Michigan State only attempted 17 two-pointers, the Huskies still blocked three of them. So that is crazy. The Spartans only averaged 32 three-point attempts in their three games against Georgetown, Purdue, and Virginia Tech. So they were relying heavily on the three, and it didn't come out for them. That's why Connecticut is in the Final Four. And as great as they were during the season, a blocking shots. The Elite Eight game against Michigan State was the first time in the tournament that the Huskies blocked more than 10% of their opponent's 2-point field goal attempts. If they can find that against Florida and protect the rim and get blocked shots and then get easy transition buckets, they have a great chance of knocking off the number one overall seed in Florida. And I looked back, did some research. Connecticut defeated Florida earlier during the season. So even though Wilbekin of the Florida did not play at the end because he fouled out. So it's going to be interesting to see if Connecticut can protect the rim and block shots and get easy transition buckets. Don't be surprised if they knock off Florida. The next biggest X factor of the Final Four is Kentucky's offensive rebounding prowess. Kentucky, they knocked off Michigan in the Elite Eight with Aaron Harrison's game-winning three-pointer with 2.6 seconds. But the Wildcats would have never been in that position if they did not grab 17 offensive rebounds, which led to 17 second chance points. And that's why, that's mainly why they were in the game, and that's why they came out with the victory, because they had, they worked harder on the glass on the offensive side and defensive side than Michigan. So, but it's not a surprise, because Kentucky, they ranked number one in the country in offensive rebounding. They have grabbed 42.5% of possible offensive rebounds throughout the season. But they're, but they're playing at a higher level, and they're grabbing more offensive rebounds during the NCAA tournament. They grabbed 63% of the possible offensive rebounds during that game against Michigan. Marcus Lee, that one of their big men, entered the game with only with 45 points and 27 rebounds over the course of the entire season, but he had 7 offensive rebounds all by himself, finishing the game with a completely 10 points and 8 boards. So Kentucky, even though they've got their 5 freshmen, and that's all they talk about, the 5 starting freshmen, their Fab 5, they got guys coming off the bench who hasn't produced much during the season, and one of the biggest games to advance to the Final Four, Marcus Lee here, one of their big men, he grabbed 8 rebounds, seven of them offensive rebounds, and got second chance points. So they're firing on all cylinders right now. And also, when a team is making 50% of its shots and grabbing better than 60% of its misses, that's crazy. So if Kentucky, they play Wisconsin, you know, Wisconsin's got their big man in Frank Kaminsky. It's going to be tough, because he's a great big man who can also grab rebounds. But if they grab offensive rebounds as a team and give it a team effort, don't be surprised if Kentucky knocks off Wisconsin, because Kentucky is firing on all cylinders right now. Julius Randle's playing good. Both the Harrison brothers are playing good. So Wisconsin should not take Kentucky lightly. The next big X factor is the free throw shooting. Connecticut has been one of the best free throw shooting teams this season at 77.4%. The Huskies, they rank 4th in the country. And then in the tournament, they're shooting 88% from the free throw line. Wisconsin's also pretty strong when it comes to shooting free throws. They shoot 74.1% for the season, and they're shooting 70% during the tournament. But the two SEC teams in Florida and Kentucky, they do not shoot good. They don't shoot great from the free throw line. Florida shoots 74% from the free throw line, and Kentucky shoots 71.6% from the free throw line. And they've been more reliable on the free throws in the tournament, because they, you know, they've been getting into games that come down to the wire, and they've been getting into double bonuses or bonuses, so they have to shoot free throws. So over the course of 38 games, Kentucky shoots just 68.5% from the free throw line, while Florida checks in at 66.8%. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, if these Final Four games are close. So if Connecticut has Florida, it's a close game, and it goes to free throws, and Connecticut's making their free throws and Florida's not making their free throws, that's going to be a big problem, because they're going to look back in the game and say, if we lost the game on free throws. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We'll see if Kentucky or Florida can make their free throws through the Final Four, because I expect both of these games to be close. So we'll see what happens. The next biggest X factor of the Final Four, we talked about Kentucky's offensive rebounding prowess. Well, Florida, they're we're going to talk about Florida's overall rebounding process, rebounding both on both the defensive side and offensive side. Florida has proved to be plenty capable of banging with Kentucky's big men. The Wildcats have been out-rebounded in a game only twice in the last 2 months, and the Gators were responsible for both of those games. So when Florida and Kentucky have played head-to-head, Florida has out-rebounded Kentucky. Florida has won the rebounding battle in each of its four tournament games, resulting in an overall margin of a plus 33. So they've grabbed an average of 33 rebounds more than their opponent in each game. The most impressive effort during the Gators' tournament run was holding Pittsburgh's Talib Zana to just 6 rebounds in 38 minutes. In the 11 games prior to that one, Zana was averaging 1 rebound for every 2.97 minutes on the court. His effectiveness was slashed by more than 50% by Patrick Young and company, as he grabbed just 1 rebound for every 6.33 minutes of playing time. So again, against the Kentucky team that has broken even in rebounding margin in the tournament, that can be a huge advantage for Florida, because they can, you know, not give Connecticut second chances on the defensive side by grabbing defensive rebounds, but Florida can also give themselves second chances on the offensive side and grabbing offensive rebounds. So Connecticut's going to have to focus on boxing out and grabbing rebounds, because if they just let Florida grab rebounds as they please, it's going to be a long day for Connecticut, and Connecticut does not want to see that. The next X factor of the Final Four is Wisconsin's turnover-free offense. They are the second least turnover-prone offense in the country. To this point in the tournament, Wisconsin has committed 1 turnover for every 5 minutes of game time and 1 turnover for every 7.5 possessions. Compared to Kentucky turns it once every 3 minutes and once every 5 possessions, which is not that good. So Wisconsin, they're an older team. They have discipline. They know what it takes, and they take care of the ball, because they don't want to turn over the ball, and then the opposing team gets easy possessions. So that's going to be something to watch, is Wisconsin's turnover-free offense versus Kentucky, who turns it over way more than Wisconsin does. So we'll see if Kentucky can, you know, take care of the ball and be as disciplined as Wisconsin. Next biggest X factor is UConn's DeAndre Daniels. DeAndre Daniels is a power forward who plays for the University of Connecticut. He has a wide range of potential. In Connecticut's first game against Memphis, he had 23 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 block shots, and hit 4 of his 5 three-point attempts. Against Louisville 2 days later, he had all 3 points, and he only had 3 points and 4 rebounds. So he's inconsistent. So if Connecticut wants to knock off Florida, he's got to play one of his best games of his career. So he's very inconsistent, because then 3 days after he played Louisville, he exploded for 31 points and 12 rebounds. So he has the potential of being a great player. He's just got to be consistent over time, and he hasn't been consistent. He's very inconsistent. So if Connecticut wants to knock out Florida, the DeAndre Daniels, their power forward, needs to step up. He needs to step up and have a very consistent game and play one of the best games of his career. The next biggest X factor of the Final Four is Kentucky's second big man. Their They've got Julius Randle, who plays power forward for them. So they need a center because their starting center, Willie Cauley-Stein, he's unlikely to play again this season because he got hurt during the tournament. So Kentucky's going to be relying heavily on the combination of Dakari Johnson, Marcus Lee to fill the position of Julius Randle's second fiddle. So, and against Wisconsin, the second big man in the paint could be a gigantic difference maker because Frank Kaminsky of Wisconsin has been a beast for them. But he may be overmatched in the post by Kentucky's raw size and athleticism because Kaminsky is not that athletic. And Kentucky has many athletic big men that can match up well with him. So it's going to be interesting to see how Kentucky's going to do without Willie Cauley-Stein and see if Dakari Johnson or Marcus Lee can step up. Like last game in the Elite Eight against Michigan State, Marcus Lee stepped up. He had 10 points, 8 rebounds. He grabbed 7 offensive rebounds. So if he puts out one of them same performances as he did last game, Kentucky can knock off Wisconsin. Next is the shooting guards for Connecticut and Florida. They're very similar, very similar. Both teams have a do-it-all point guard who will make at least 3 wow plays per game. Both are very good at defending the paint, ranking in the top 15 nationally in two-point field goal defenses. And they rely heavily on their sixth man. For Florida, it's Dorian Finney-Smith. And then for Connecticut, it's LaShawn Croma. And this is where the game's going to be decided because both the game's going to be decided is going to be at the shooting guard matchup. Ryan Boatwright has done a lot for Connecticut this season, but he's struggled to find his shot over the past month. In 12 games since February 23rd, Boatwright is shooting 35.6% from the field and 36.4% from three-point range. And on the other hand, Michael Frazier, the last 12 games, he is shooting 48.2% from the field and 50.6% from three-point range. And he has made nearly 3 times as many triples as Boatwright. So Florida, on paper, has the advantage at the shooting guard battle with Michael Frazier over Ryan Boatwright. But if Boatwright can match Frazier, then this game is going down to the wire. This game is going to could even go into overtime. So if Boatwright steps up and plays as good as Frazier does, it's going to be a really good game. Next biggest X factor is Wisconsin's three-point shooting. Thus far in the tournament, Kentucky's three-point defense has been a bit lackluster. You know, they let Wichita State make 10 of 21 triples. Louisville just shot 4 of 15 behind the arc. But Russ Smith, Louisville's point guard, missed a lot of open shots in the first half. Wisconsin's starting backcourt couldn't ask for a better matchup because they shoot so well. Ben Brust, John Gasser, and Trevon Jackson struggled against Arizona, but they shot a combined 19 of 36 from behind the arc in the first 3 game in the first 3 tournament games. So they shot over 50% at the 3-point line. So Wisconsin can shoot the 3, and playing against Kentucky, whose 3-point defense isn't the best in the country. So if Wisconsin takes advantage of that, it might be a blowout. And it might just kill Kentucky's dreams of winning a national title. Last X factor of the Final Four is Shabazz Napier. He's the guard for Connecticut versus Florida's defense. Over his last 3 games, Shabazz is averaging 1.82 points per field goal attempt. But however, Florida has held 11 consecutive opponents to fewer than 1 point per possession for a total averaging of 0.88 points per possession. Converting to points per field goal attempt yields a ratio of 1.08. So what all that junk means is that when Shabazz, during the tournament, he's been consistent in scoring on every possession he goes, on every possession Connecticut has. But Florida, they hold their opponents, and their opponents don't score on every possession or on most of the possessions that they get. So Florida's opponents may not score on like four or five straight possessions because Florida defense is so good. So it's going to be interesting to see if Shabazz can overcome that and score on most of the and have his team score on most of his possessions. So that's going to be interesting. Predictions for the Final Four. I see Florida defeating Connecticut, and I see Wisconsin defeating Kentucky. So it's going to be a Florida. So the games are on Saturday. The Final Four is Saturday. It's going to be Connecticut and Florida versus Wisconsin and Kentucky. I see Wisconsin and Florida both moving on to the national championship game, which is going to be played on Monday. So we'll see. But I expect these games both to come down. They're going to be close games. I don't expect any blowouts. So we'll see there. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the San Antonio Spurs versus the Oklahoma City Thunder. This is Ball is Life on radio at radio.dominican.edu. And we'll be back after this break.
Couldn't wait to see the master jam. the master jamming. Couldn't wait to see the master jam. He's a one-man band in his own right. The master jams to the broad daylight. No instruments needed, just two record players, a stage, a crowd, and two rock sayers. The ingredients are here, so I have no fear. Definition defined, deposition is clear. You couldn't be late, hesitate to debate. The master is here, and you could not wait. Couldn't wait to see the master jamming. Couldn't wait to see the master jam. The master jamming, couldn't wait to see the master jam. Now he's the jam master.
Welcome back, welcome back. Before we get started, quick reminder, later today at 4 o'clock, come in and tune into radio.dominican.edu and listen to my man DJ Proof and his show Sound of the Underground, where he'll give you the latest updates on the underground of rap, reggae, and rock. So listen to my man DJ Proof, Sound of the Underground, 4 to 5 on radio.dominican.edu. So there's a big game today between the two best teams in the Western Conference, and that is the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder in Oklahoma City. That's important because Oklahoma City always plays great at home. These two teams, they're the two best teams in the Western Conference. San Antonio looks like they're going to end up with the best record in the whole league. They stand right now at 59-16, where Oklahoma City stands at 54-19. So right now, the Spurs are one of the hottest teams in the league right now. The San Antonio Spurs, they're on a 19-game winning streak. They just defeated the Golden State Warriors last night, 111-90 at home. So they're heading to Oklahoma City tonight to complete a back-to-back set against the Thunder with the hopes of wrapping up the number one seed in the Western Conference. Because if the Spurs do win today, that will make Oklahoma City 5 games back with only 6 games remaining. If they do lose, they're not completely out of getting the number one seed, but it's highly unlikely that they'll get it. So if the Spurs win today, they wrap up the number one seed in the West. And they're trying to extend their franchise record winning streak to 20 games. So they've all been playing well. Tim Duncan's been playing well. Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, Kawhi Leonard. And Kawhi Leonard, he's playing a key role in the Spurs' success. Because, you know, Kawhi Leonard's a great player, but teams really don't kind of focus on him. They focus on the big three, and Tony Parker, Tim Duncan, and Manu Ginobili. That's the Spurs' big three. That's where most of the production comes from. But Kawhi Leonard is one of the best young players in the game right now. And he showed it in the playoffs last year and in the finals. He was going toe-to-toe with LeBron James, or going toe-to-toe with Harrison Barnes in the playoffs. And he's just been dominant. He's going to be a key player for the Spurs for years to come. And a lot of teams don't focus on him because they're giving most of their attention to, again, Parker, Duncan, and Ginobili. But Kawhi Leonard is playing a big role right now. Big role for the Spurs' 19-game winning streak. But can't count Oklahoma City Thunder. Oklahoma City Thunder thinks they're the best in the league. The Spurs think they're best in the league. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch this game tonight, even though it's a game where it kind of doesn't matter because both teams already clinched playoff spots. They already got their seeds. You still want to, you know, but they just want, they're not, I expect both teams to play at a high level because they still want to see where they're at against going against each other, because they can end up facing each other in the Western Conference Finals and playing for a chance to be in the NBA Finals. So they're not gonna let each team see what they got, but it's gonna be a good game tonight. But the Spurs, they're in Oklahoma City Thunder, and the Spurs, they've had trouble in Oklahoma City. They've had a lot of trouble. They have had a lot of trouble. They've lost. Let's see. The Spurs have lost. The Spurs have lost the last six meetings. They've lost the last six meetings in Oklahoma City. Yeah, they've dropped their last four. They've dropped their last four meetings with the Thunder, as well as the last six visits to Oklahoma City. So they've lost six straight in Oklahoma City, and they've lost the last four meetings to the Thunder. So the Thunder have their number right now. So that's gonna be interesting to watch. And everyone always, like, in the beginning of the year, always, like, says, you know, the Spurs, they don't got it no more. They're too old. This is going to be the year they finally drop off. And we're still waiting for the Spurs to drop off. It's been, like, 6 to 7 years now, and we're still waiting for the Spurs to drop off, and they haven't dropped off. So that's why Greg Popovich, the Spurs head coach, that's why he's being considered for Coach of the Year again. And with this winning streak that they have going on, and it's been like a string of blowout losses, the Spurs have won their last four games by an average of 23.5 points. Tim Duncan scored 15 points in 20 minutes last night. Tony Parker had 18 in 28 minutes. And these blowout wins have allowed Greg Popovich to rest some of his key players. You know, you got to rest the old guys, because Tim Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker are up there in age. So you get to rest them and give them fresh legs for the playoffs. So that's good, because, you know, you don't want to have the thing with having older players, you know, their body gets beat down coming towards the end of the season. You don't want that, because you don't want, once playoff time comes around, you want your key players who are older be tired and not put out the same production that they did early in the season. So, and Greg Popovich does that a lot, even if they're not on a 19-game winning streak. Over the past couple of years, he's been, you know, resting his key players. They just, like, Tim Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker didn't dress one night. They didn't play one night. And it's been a coach's decision. And people don't like that because, you know, they pay tickets to see the star players and to see, like, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili. But in a basketball sense, it's kind of a good move because, one, you are resting your star players and keeping them fresh for the playoffs. And two, you're giving the guys on your bench who don't play a lot, so like all the role players and the bench warmers that don't play, you're giving them playing time. So when it comes playoff time and you need them to step up, they do, and they deliver, and they have, because they have the experience and they have the confidence from those earlier games that they played in the season. And that, like, happened last year. You know, they had Gary Neal. He came out of nowhere. He started making threes. He wasn't a big contributor during the season, but when it came playoff season, he stepped up. Danny Green, he came out of nowhere. He was breaking three-point records during the finals. So Craig Popovich knows what he's doing, and I think he can – he probably can lead this team to another finals, because I think they're the favorites coming out of the West. Yes, you got Oklahoma City Thunder, but still, I don't know about Oklahoma City Thunder. How about if Westbrook or Durant struggle, who else is going to score for them? That's a problem. That's one of their flaw, their biggest flaw. You got the Clippers, but how about when Chris Paul is not performing as well as he should be? Where's their? How are they going to get the ball moving? How are they going to move the ball around? Yes, Blake Griffin can score, but you can't just give it to Blake Griffin and give him the ball and say, you know, do what you need to do, because he still needs Chris Paul, because that's how the Clippers, when the Clippers are on a roll, they score, like, in doing pick and rolls, or Chris Paul getting by his man and kicking out to one of the shooters in Jamal Crawford. So, and Danny Granger. So that's one of their biggest flaws. How about if Chris Paul doesn't do as well as he's supposed to? And then, you know, Houston, how about if James Harden doesn't perform as well as he is? So the San Antonio is the favorite to come out of the West, because all of their players can contribute. Again, the big three in Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan, but Kawhi Leonard, Marco Bellinelli, Thiago Splitter, Boris Diaw, guys that you don't expect to do a lot, but they contribute just enough so their team can win and advance. So the Spurs, 19-game winning streak, and the favorites come out of the West. Looking at the Thunder, you know, they're an elite team, but again, like I said, besides Westbrook and Durant, who's going to score for them? Serge Ibaka, he's not a guy that can create his own shots. Yes, he can make shots when he's open or if you give it to him in the post, but he can't, like, create his own shot. He needs someone else to create it for him. Kendrick Perkins, he doesn't score. He's just basically there to grab rebounds. He's just basically there as a big body. He doesn't do much. Seth Alosha, he can shoot the three, but again, he's only going to average maybe like 10, 12 points a game during the postseason. They've got Reggie Jackson coming off the bench. They've got Jeremy Lamb, Derek Fisher. But see, these guys are not go-to scorers. They can't create their own shot. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens between if Durant and Westbrook can carry the Thunder back to the finals. They've been to the finals once a couple years ago, but they had James Harden as their sixth man. They don't have that no more. So, and that's always been their biggest flaw, is who else is going to contribute besides Westbrook and Durant. So they play tonight at 5, San Antonio, Oklahoma City. Yes, it's the end of the year game. It's not a game that really going to matter, but it should be a good basketball game and good basketball to watch, because there's really not a lot of basketball today. There's that, and then you also got Dallas and the Clippers. That should be a fun one too. Dallas and the Clippers. Dallas is fighting for the eighth spot in the West. So San Antonio, Oklahoma City tonight at 5. should be a good game. And, you know, there's six more games remaining in the season, and then the playoffs start. And that's when the real basketball starts. So, Final Four Saturday, six more games, couple weeks, and the playoffs, the NBA playoffs start. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll be talking about my end of the year NBA award predictions on who's going to win Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, Most Improved Player of the Year, MVP, Six-Man Defensive Player. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Sit back. We're going to come from a quick break, and I will be right back. This is Ball is Life with your host, Jay Smooth.
Get out of my head and fall into my arms instead.
So get out, get out, get out.
Welcome back to Ball is Life. I am Jay Smooth. Quick reminder before we go on into the next segment. Tomorrow, tune in tomorrow at 12:30 for the Penguin Press Pass here at radio.dominican.edu. Real students, real news. It's a live broadcast. Give you all the updated news information that you need, from world news to political news to entertainment news, sports news. So everything you need to hear, tune in to the Penguin Press Pass, 12:30 tomorrow on radio.dominican.edu. So let's hit into the next segment, and that is my end of the year predictions for the NBA awards. So we're here at the end of the year. I gave my mid-season, and we'll see if they have changed from last time. See if my predictions have changed. So we'll start off here with Rookie of the Year, and there's three guys here. It's a very close race, but there's three guys here that are all deserving of the Rookie of the Year award. So there is Michael Carter Williams, the point guard of the Philadelphia 76ers. Victor Oladipo, he's a point guard / shooting guard for the Orlando Magic, and the point guard Trey Burke he's the point guard for the Utah Jazz. So it's a toss up because either of these guys can win. And my midseason pick, I had Michael Carter Williams because he was coming off a good first half of the season. His team, they weren't doing great, but they were doing better than what other people expected. But since the All-Star break, he's kind of declined. Carter Williams, he has the early name recognition. He was the favorite in the first half of the season because he was just lighting it up. And his stats are not that bad. He's averaging 16.5 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, and 2 steals. But the thing is, he's shooting under 40% from the field and well under 30% from the three-point line. And his team, the Philadelphia 76ers, tied the North American pro sports record for most consecutive losses with 26 straight losses. So that's not helping his resume, but his stats, again, 16.5 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. That's what's keeping him up there because his stats are way better than Victor Oladipo and Trey Burke. Okay, Oladipo, he's played more and more of his team's games than MCW, Michael Carter Williams. He's hit more than 40% of his field goals, 41.4 to be exact. And he's had enough spectacular moments on the court to fill a modest YouTube highlight reel. But Oladipo hasn't started all of his games. He may play more games, but he hasn't started all of his games like Carter Williams, and hasn't been quite as productive on the stats wise. He's only averaging 14 points, 4.3 rebounds, 4.2 assists, and 1.6 steals. And as for Trey Burke, he's played and started about as many games as Michael Carter Williams. He's racked up more assists than Carter Williams with 5.3 per game. And he's turned over the ball less frequently than both Oladipo and Carter Williams. He's only turned it over 1.9 times a game. But the trouble is that Burke has been least efficient of all of the three from the field. He's only shooting 37.8% with a scoring average of only 12.5%. And that's not going to take, you know, these voters' breaths away. So at the end of the day, I see Michael Carter Williams coming out with the Rookie of the Year award because even though his play has kind of declined a bit, he's still, I think the first half of the season is enough for him to win the Rookie of the Year award. Next award is the Most Improved Player award. The two that are close right now, it's either going to be my midseason pick was Anthony Davis. I thought Anthony Davis was playing real well. He was becoming a leader for the Pelicans in only his second season. But after watching, because my roommate, he's a Clippers fan, and I've been watching the Clippers a lot lately, I am going to take DeAndre Jordan with the Most Improved Player award. DeAndre Jordan, it's a close one, but I like DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan has been playing great. He's matured as a player because when he was younger, he always had the locker room drama. But he's more focused both on and off the court, and that's thanks to Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers has turned that around. DeAndre Jordan's playing defense with a purpose now. And offense, you know, they just used to throw him lobs and he used to dunk it, but he's improved his post game a lot. His hook shots have improved. His free throws shootings have improved. So I want to take, you know, I want Anthony, you know, it would be great to see Anthony Davis win it, most improved player, but I think DeAndre Jordan is more deserving of it right now. So DeAndre Jordan is my prediction right now to win the most improved player of the year award. So we're going to head into the sixth man of the year award now. And I think it's a landslide. No one comes close to this. It's Jamal Crawford. Jamal Crawford is the sixth man of the year. But he was starting for the Clippers for a while, so that one might have that's why, because I had Manu Ginobili in my mid-season predictions, because at that time Jamal Crawford was starting, but since Danny Granger has came back, the Clippers signed Danny Granger and they inserted him in the starting lineup. Jamal Crawford is now the sixth man again, but he's going to take it. He's averaging 20 points per game. And yeah, no. Set actually, yeah, 20 points per game. He's becoming the sixth man. And of his five games of 30 points or more, four of came off the bench. So he scored 30 points four times coming off the bench. He's hands down the sixth man of the year. And plus, the Clippers have a record of 19-9 this season when Crawford has scored 20 points or more. So, and there's some guys in there, Markieff Morris of the Suns, or Gerald Green of the Suns, or even Nick Young of the Lakers, who's the sixth. But they don't have enough even like stats or anything, or even team success, to compete with Jamal Crawford. Jamal Crawford will be the sixth man of the year, hands down. Next award, defensive player. Now this is a little strange, because midseason I had Roy Hibbert. He was the clear favorite. No one came close. But I've been watching a lot of games lately, and I've been watching, you know, the Chicago Bulls and the Pacers, they've been declining. Their play hasn't been as well as it was in the beginning of the season. And Roy Hibbert's, you know, defensive presence has kind of fell off. So I'm going to take Joakim Noah of the center of the Chicago Bulls. I think he will win Defensive Player of the Year. I watched the game against Miami a couple weeks ago, and you can just tell he brings he's the energy of the team. He gets the fans into the game. He gets his teammates into the game. He even gets his coach into the game. He just has that much intensity and that much passion that I see him winning the Defensive Player of the Year award. And Tom Thibodeau, the Bulls head coach, deserves credit for keeping his players focused, because, you know, they did trade Luol Deng. Derrick Rose did go out, but Noah he leads the league in defensive rating. The Bulls have allowed fewer than 96 points per 100 possessions when he's on the floor. And according to Synergy Sports, his opponents have just shot 38.4% from the floor. So he's dominant in the paint. He grabs rebounds. He blocks shots. And what convinced me to pick him as a defensive player, again, when he was playing the Miami Heat and they switch, he can switch to, and he can guard anyone. He was guarding LeBron James, and LeBron was trying to shake him off, and LeBron could not shake Joakim Noah off. Joakim Noah is that great of a defensive player. So Joakim Noah will win the Defensive Player of the Year award. So sorry, Roy Hibbert, but your play has decline, and you are not going to win the Defensive Player of the Year award. Coach of the Year now. I was talking about the San Antonio Spurs and their 19-game winning streak. So, and a lot of credit has to go to Greg Popovich. And Greg Popovich, I believe, will win Coach of the Year award. I had Tom Thibodeau midseason, but the way the Spurs have been playing lately, I got to take Greg Popovich. Greg Popovich right now has his team firing on all cylinders. They're the best team in the Western Conference, best team in the NBA right now. So Greg Popovich deserves a lot of credit. And he will be the coach of the year. And the one, the MVP. Who's going to win MVP? It's between two people. You can add Blake Griffin into the conversation or Joakim Noah, but it's either going to be one of two people. It's either going to be Kevin Durant of the Oklahoma City Thunder or LeBron James of the Miami Heat. And midseason, I had Kevin Durant winning, and I still do have Kevin Durant winning. Nothing. I'm not taking anything away from LeBron James, but because he's putting up MVP numbers like he always does. He's averaging 26.7 points per game, 6.9 rebounds per game, 6.5 assists per game, 1.6 steals per game. He's shooting 56% from the field, 37% from three, and those are just MVP numbers. But Durant's team has been, you know, hit with injuries. He didn't play with Westbrook for a lot. Westbrook was been injured twice this season. They've been operating without Kendrick Perkins and Steph Alosha since late February, and have since seen Reggie Jackson go out with a back sprain. Yet OKC is on a pace to win another 60-game season against a Western Conference schedule, which is much tougher than Miami's faced in the Eastern Conference. And Durant, he's averaging 32.2 points per game, so he's going to be the league scoring champion. His free throw percentage is 87%, and we'll just leave him just shy of his second straight 50-40-90 season. But he's getting to the line more often. He's been winning games without some of his star players. So Durant will win the MVP award. So it is time to go. I'm sorry, but it is time to go. Thank you again for listening. This is Jay Smooth, and you're listening to Ball is Life on radio.dominican.edu. Everyone, have a nice weekend.